the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Well, high school, in fact, all schools are just about out, and high school graduations are scheduled all over the country. But this academic year is not ending without some interesting controversy. And we're going to be looking up at the Pacific Northwest, where a recent controversy has emerged that has national implications. It has to do with wrestling. With wrestling as an official sport in interleague play, and it has to do with boys being required to wrestle girls in high school. Some boys saying they can't do this because of moral reservations, and some parents of girls now filing suit in federal court to require the boys to wrestle and not to forfeit the matches. And then out of Texas, a related controversy over cheerleading. And an action by the Texas legislature to ban what has been described as sexually explicit and pornographic cheerleading. And some parents are opposed to this legislative action. There's a lot for us to talk about here in terms of gender confusion and the morality of how we should understand the high school experience and all the rest. And it's going to be a fascinating discussion. And it'll come up in just a couple of minutes. First, a report from what didn't happen in Cambridge, Massachusetts. You remember that just before the end of the week, some students at MIT put together a plan in order to hold a conference for time travelers, and they embedded some special acid-free pieces of paper in books in the MIT library in case someone in future centuries should find it. They announced the meeting was going to be held at this time and invited all time travelers to attend. They even cordoned off a certain area in the conference room and outside the buildings where space-traveling machines could locate in order for their occupants to attend the conference. And no one showed up. At least not yet. Stay tuned. Big news out of Europe, especially over the weekend, with yesterday marking the 60th anniversary of VE Day, Victory in Europe Day. And I want to tell you, I was proud as an American to hear what our president had to say when he was there. And you remember, he's been visiting the Soviet Union. He is today in the Republic of Georgia. And he was in Latvia on Saturday. This is what he had to say on Saturday. And I want you to note that he spoke specifically about the Yalta Agreement at the end of World War II. And he said something no American president has ever yet said. Listen to his words. He said the agreement at Yalta followed in the unjust tradition of Munich and the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact. Once again, when powerful governments negotiated, the freedom of small nations was somehow expendable. Yet this attempt to sacrifice freedom for the sake of stability left a continent divided and unstable. The captivity of millions in Central and Eastern Europe will be remembered as one of the greatest wrongs of history. Let's go back to 1945. It was very, very clear that the war was coming to a conclusion. And it was in that context that the Yalta Agreement was signed by the great powers, the Allies, as they were then known, and in particular, it was Churchill and Stalin and Harry S. Truman who put this together, and it led to what we now know was the Soviet domination of much of Eastern Europe. And this has been questioned over and over and over again, but this particular document, this particular agreement, it goes back to the fact that Roosevelt was understood by Churchill to have been duped by Stalin, and it has led to an endless debate in American history as to whether or not Yalta was the right thing at the right time. Those who argue against it just point to the fact that it enslaved millions behind what we later called the Iron Curtain. Those who argued for it said, look, Stalin's troops were already on the ground, and the Roosevelt administration and later the Truman administration had no choice but to accept the reality that to contest Stalin for that territory would be to move directly from World War II into World War III. I want to tell you where I think the bottom line moral issue is here, and it is that the United States should never have signed the agreement and should never have agreed to the enslavement of millions of people. President Ronald Reagan spoke of the basic injustice behind the agreement, but President George W. Bush, speaking to the Latvians in Latvia, said what no American president has ever yet said, and that is that it was wrong. And it constituted an apology to the people of Central and Eastern Europe, and it was an important thing to have said. and an important reminder of the morality of war, even as war comes to a conclusion. And by the way, if you're looking at all the news coverage about the 60th anniversary of VE Day, you will note that as you look at VE Day, there are those who go back and say, yes, the war was won, but at what cost? Well, let's reverse that question and say the war was won, and what would have been the cost of losing it? And so when you go back even to the Yalta Agreement and you think about Stalin and Churchill and Roosevelt there, just remember that these were men who had led their nations through an incredible crucible of war. And it also leads to all kinds of questions about how war can and should be fought, questions that are just as unsettled in the year 2005 as they were in 1945. But I can guarantee you this, no one living in 1945, living in the Allied countries, living around the world, a world that had been riven by war, doubted that winning the war was a good thing, and that it was a good thing that Adolf Hitler was no longer in power and able to threaten other nations and threaten world domination. The only unsettled question is whether anything could have been done to have prevented the Soviet Union and Joseph Stalin from continuing its own domination and tyranny in intervening years. Folks, we've been watching this controversy in Maryland, that's Montgomery County, Maryland, very, very closely, a sex education controversy. You remember just on Friday, a federal judge handed down an order that prevented by a restraining order, the Montgomery County Public Schools from instituting this radical sex education curriculum. And then the school superintendent announced later the same day that they would be pulling it back. Well, now we know that the situation was far worse than anything we had even understood. And federal judge Alexander Williams, U.S. District Judge there in Maryland, makes the point very clear in his ruling and in its attached memorandum. He says that the reason why he intervened in this was over religious discrimination. Because he made very clear that this curriculum actually made a theological argument. Listen to this from a Facts and Myths handout that was with the curriculum. Listen, I'm quoting directly from the judge's memorandum, and he is quoting from the curriculum. Listen to this. The Bible contains six passages which condemn homosexual behavior. The Bible also contains numerous passages condemning heterosexual behavior. Theologians and biblical scholars continue to differ on many biblical interpretations. They agree on one thing, however. Jesus said absolutely nothing at all about homosexuality. Among the many other things deemed an abomination are adultery, incest, wearing clothing made from more than one kind of fiber, and eating shellfish like shrimp and lobster. Religion has often been misused to justify hatred and oppression. It goes on, and it says here, today many people would no longer tolerate generalizations about homosexuality as pathology or sin. Few would condemn heterosexuality as immoral, despite high incidence of rape, incest, child abuse, adultery, family violence, promiscuity, and venereal disease among heterosexuals. Fortunately, many within organized religions are beginning to address the homophobia of the church. The National Council of Churches of Christ, the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, the Unitarian Universalist Association, the Society of Friends, the Quakers, and the Universal Fellowship of Metropolitan Community Churches support full civil rights for gay men and lesbians as they do for everyone else, end quote. So in other words, there are certain churches, in particular Baptists, who are identified, certain denominations identified as holding to homophobia. They're the bad guys, and there's certain denominations such as, well, you heard me list them, who want civil rights for gays and lesbians as they do for everyone else. That's to use the direct language from the curriculum. This was going to be in public schools, after all. And remember that this curriculum was going to encourage children to question their own sexual identity and was going to teach them how to use condoms using a video that had a cucumber demonstration. And they think we're nuts. Stephanie Kuntz, by the way, is the columnist that we have been tracking on the marriage issue, and it's because she has a new book coming out. And when the book actually arrives, it's not in the bookstores yet, we're going to give it a lot of attention. Because in it is a lot of material we need to consider carefully, even though she comes from a diametrically opposed worldview to my own. She's writing in the LA Times over the weekend an article entitled, Our Kids Are Not Doomed. And the point she's trying to make here is that relativizing the family is a good thing. Tearing apart a standard definition of family, she says, is liberation, and all this concern about the social impact of unwed mothering and divorce and all the rest, she said, we just need to look past the statistics in a more psychotherapeutic way and understand that kids are actually handling all this pretty well. She says here, single parenthood does increase the risk that teens will get into trouble, but so do poverty, parental conflict, frequent school relocation, parental substance abuse, and even an emotionally distant relationship with married parents. So in other words, what she's saying here is that that heterosexual parents sometimes don't do a good job, so let's just not worry about the sexuality issue or any of the rest. Well, would it interest you to know that she teaches at Evergreen State College in Washington State? I went to the website. You just need to listen to this. This is from the catalog, the posted catalog at the website of Evergreen State College. At Evergreen, you'll be encouraged to voice your opinion. Your background, ethnicity, social class, and preferred lifestyle will add to the multicultural perspectives here. It goes on to say, because your learning is too important to be reduced to an arbitrary number or letter grade, you'll receive narrative evaluations from your faculty. Faculty will detail your accomplishments. They're so liberal, they don't even believe in grades. Now that's a deal. Why am I not surprised that that's where Professor Kuntz teaches? We'll be back to talk about wrestling and a controversy that matters for you and your family. This is the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to take you up to the Pacific Northwest, a news story that appeared in the Seattle Times over the weekend. It seems there are two Christian schools there in the area, Tacoma Baptist and Cascade Christian, that are the focus of a controversy because these two Puget Sound area schools won't allow their boys to wrestle girls. And we're not talking about out on the playground here, thankfully. We're talking about an inter-school play. And the girls who wrestled for several Puget Sound middle schools this year were told won their matches, but they won because the boys forfeited. And that's a principle, a policy, that these Christian schools have devised because they don't think it's right for boys to wrestle girls. Now, I think as a country, we have reached a serious point of confusion where we would be debating an issue like this. And it's not just some kind of academic debate. Because we are now told that there are people who are going to be going to court over this. In particular, a girl by the name of Megan Connors, her father is going to court, a federal court, as a matter of fact, seeking a legal action to prevent boys from forfeiting because they don't want to wrestle girls. Now, there's a lot going on here. The superintendent of Cascade Christian School said this, "Our approach is a concern for a young man and a young lady both. Very clearly, issues of modesty, issues of decorum, issues of sexuality play into this. But the argument coming from the other side is that it really isn't about sex at all, that the proximity of a boy and a girl in a wrestling match ought not to be an issue. And obviously, there are just very sensitive issues here. The whole idea of girls wrestling in inter-school play, this has emerged. Only Hawaii and Texas have separate tournaments for girls wrestlers at the high school level. The rest of the country, because of Title IX, where girls compete, they compete with and against boys. And that's something I'll bet a lot of parents in this country don't know about. We're very glad to have as our guest today Andrew Spradlin, who is singles minister at the Valley Baptist Church in Bakersfield, California. He is a two-time high school All-American wrestler. He was at one time ranked number 4 in the USA. Andrew, welcome to the Albert Mohler Program.
Thank you.
Listen, we're glad to have you. And I need someone who has firsthand experience in this whole wrestling picture. I mean, this is something fairly new, isn't it, with boys and girls wrestling each other in middle school and high school?
Yeah, it seems to be fairly new in the last 10 or 15 years, I guess.
Yeah, probably Title IX, the federal law about this, is what really mandated the change. But let me ask you this, Andrew. When you were a high school athlete just a few years ago, and when you were a nationally ranked wrestler, did you ever have to face this particular decision? And did you know how you would respond if you had faced it?
Well, luckily, I never had to face the decision, or that situation. But I made a decision a long time ago that if I ever did, I would be forced to forfeit.
Now, is that because you're a sexist, Andrew, or is there something deeper involved here?
Not at all. I've always been taught to show the utmost respect for a woman. And in wrestling, you have to put your hands in places that are simply inappropriate if you're wrestling a girl.
Yeah, and let's just talk about something honest here, because obviously there's physical proximity that's involved in wrestling. I mean, even how you start out in terms of position and then the holds that are required. But isn't there something awkward? Someone may just classify me as Neanderthal and sexist on this, but if so, so be it. But, Andrew, isn't there just something awkward about a boy forcing a girl down on a mat? I mean, and having a test of physical power, a boy against a girl, wouldn't that make you feel awkward in the first place?
It's very awkward. For those that I've seen wrestle different girls, they react in one or two different ways. They're either try to be so appropriate that they end up not wrestling to their fullest potential, or they're completely inappropriate, touching the girls in ways that outside of the wrestling room or the wrestling mat would get them arrested for sexual harassment.
You know, that's one of the points I have seen in the discussion over this, Andrew. You know, literally, there are legal questions involved here. You know, I would have to say that even if there were a young man in the match and he thought he was covered by some kind of understanding, something tells me that he could never assume that he would be legally lacking vulnerability in this. Isn't that right?
I would think not. That you know, I don't know all the legal issues completely, but you're definitely, while wrestling, touching in ways that if it were a person of the opposite sex, it would be completely inappropriate.
Well, you know, wrestling has a very proud heritage going back to the ancient Greeks, and it is still an Olympic sport. And, Andrew, you are very good at it, and so congratulations to you on that. And, you know, you really know what you're talking about here. You know, just imagine this controversy right now in the Pacific Northwest. If you are right now not just a wrestler, but let's just say you're a wrestling coach right now, what would you tell your boys to do under a circumstance like this?
Well, I could tell you what my personal coach, David East, who was the 2002 National High School Coach of the Year, said. He said that I would have supported any guy forfeiting a match to a girl, even if it cost the team a tournament championship. And so I think if I were a coach there, I would have to take the same stance and encourage every guy to forfeit on the basis of it being inappropriate.
Now, what would you think of a father, in this case a father in Seattle and the area up there, who is going to be taking this to federal court because he says that's discrimination against his daughter? Andrew, let me just assume you have a chance to give this father your strongest argument. What would you say to him?
Well, I would say that it is unfair to both the girl and the boy to do wrestling. You know, either the guy is going to try to treat them appropriately as possible in that situation, and she's not really finding great competition, or he's going to do the opposite and be completely inappropriate and touch her in ways that that father would, I would think, would not appreciate. It seems to me that the issue is not athletics. Most I've seen and met seem to have an agenda beyond athletics, because it simply, you know, wrestling is such a contact sport, physical sport, that most of the time women cannot compete at the same level.
Yeah, it's an interesting picture. I mean, just to imagine what it would be like. I haven't seen a match where a boy and a girl have gone at it in terms of competitive wrestling. And it's not something I really want to see. You know, when you think about it, there's just something unnatural about it. But it's now going to be in the courts, and there in the Northwest, you can expect this is going to be an ongoing controversy. But what has surprised me is that this is just kind of the spark that illuminates the larger picture, which is that all across America, this pattern is now taking place where there are girls who demand a right to wrestle. And since there aren't enough girls with whom they can compete, they're competing with boys. And if this hasn't reached your community, folks, it will soon. I want to know what you think about this. Here's the question. Do you believe that boys should be required to wrestle girls? Or do you believe that it should even be an allowable situation? Title IX, the federal mandate, says that girls have to have equal rights, equal access to the sport. And if they don't have enough competitors of their own gender, they compete with the boys. Where is this leading us as a society? I'm going to come back and talk about what this means in terms of the gender confusion of our age and why rights talk, the talk about my rights, your rights, our rights, their rights, devolves into this endless debates where you have something as honorable as the sport of wrestling that is now a wrestling of a very different sort, this time in the courts, over who has rights, the boy to forfeit or the girl to wrestle. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Our guest has been Andrew Spradlin, singles minister at the Great Valley Baptist Church in Bakersfield, California. Thanks, Andrew. Now you have your say. Give us a call.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about a controversy from the Pacific Northwest in which high school and middle school athletes are really involved in a debate, or at least their parents and coaches are, over whether boys should be forced to wrestle with girls in inter-school competition. And this is not a small matter. In fact, this is now going to reach the federal courts. The league is being sued. And according to what I understand from the situation there, at present, any wrestler can forfeit any match for any reason. Doesn't even have to give a reason. But what's happening is that boys, especially from two Christian schools, Cascade Christian and Tacoma Baptist, they're pulling back because they say it's just not right for boys to wrestle girls. And by the way, I'm with them 150%. And yet there's one father of a female wrestler who's going to the federal court saying this just isn't fair to my daughter. Well, how do you judge fair in this? And what's the difference between fair and right? Where does justice come into this? And in a world of such gender confusion and sexual confusion, is it really sane for people to say, as some of these proponents are saying, that there's nothing sexual about a teenage boy and a teenage girl wrestling? You heard from Andrew Spradlin, a nationally ranked high school athlete, All-American wrestler in just recent years, who said, look, just given the kind of holds and touching that goes on, in the grappling that goes on in wrestling, you can't say it's appropriate for a boy and a girl to wrestle. I want to know what you think. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We're going to go to Bobby calling from Indianapolis, Indiana. Go right ahead, Bobby.
Yes, Dr. Mohler. It's sorry to say that this girl is probably being used as a pawn by her father, and I would not be surprised if her father is also receiving support in the court case upcoming from some organization outside of just himself. And I'll be curious to know what the organization might be, whether it's the ACLU or some other civil liberties union. Also, I played four sports in high school. It's completely inappropriate for a boy to be on the ground with a girl. And it's also a reflection of a lot of the touching and physicality that's going on, not only inside of the schools, during school. As a substitute teacher, I observed this. I had to call several kids out on it, but it's what's going on outside of the school among kids. It's just the physicality. And the kids should not be doing that.
You know, Bobby, you raise a really good point about the whole modesty issue. And I didn't mean to cut you off there, but, with modesty, you know, there's just a zone of proper conduct and of proper and improper contact. And I think by any measure, at least that I can understand, this would involve a lot of improper contact. I want to hear from a parent of a wrestler. We've got Janet on the line from Nashville, Tennessee, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Janet, go right ahead.
Well, we have a son that last year was in sixth grade and began wrestling at our school in Michigan, middle school in Michigan. And their first meet, he was paired with a girl, and he looked at me. I was on the mat with him, and he looked at me, and he said, Mom, I'm not touching her. And I give a lot of credit to a 12-year-old boy that says, Mom, I'm not touching her. And I just hope that he keeps up that attitude through. By the way, he no longer is wrestling. He said, I don't want to do this anymore.
Is that the reason, Janet, help us? Did he stop his participation in wrestling really over this issue?
Yes, he did. That was the second match that he would have wrestled. He refused to wrestle her, so he forfeited. And his first match he lost, his second one he forfeited to her, his next one was a bye, and that's the last time he put on his wrestling shoes.
Well, I know I'm sad to hear that, Janet, if he was really enjoying the sport, but it's really important that you called. I appreciate you sharing that with us, because it really tells us of the other side of this, in that there are boys who simply won't do it, and that means that they really can't function in the sport. Their heart is lost for the sport as well. And as the father of a sixth-grade boy myself, Janet, I think I can understand that your son really had to go through a process of thinking that through. And with you, I'm sure he made the right decision. And I'm sure you had a part in that as well. God bless you. Let's go to Laura, calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go right ahead, Laura.
Hi, Dr. Mahler. I do disagree that boys should not be wrestling girls. And I agree that it is an endless debate, and it blurs these gender lines even further than they are already. But what bothers me about this is that it demasculinizes boys. And that is what, when I hear about these kind of things, it's typically girls not getting the rights that boys have. You don't usually see it vice versa. I would say 90% of the time it's always girls not getting the rights that boys have. But look at, if you read the book Bringing Up Boys by James Dobson, he talks about how men and boys are bombarded by being demasculinized in society. You know, you look at these beer commercials on television, and you have women appearing superior to men, and these men appearing like dumb athletes, you know, watching football games.
You know, Laura, you're on to a big cultural pattern, and one that I'm glad has your attention. It ought to have the attention of all of us. We'll be back to continue this discussion. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'm Albert Mohler. Phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about this controversy in the Pacific Northwest. We were also going to talk about this controversy in Texas over cheerleading, but we're going to hold that for another day. And really, that's a related but different and distinct issue. Let's just focus today on this issue over wrestling and whether boys should be required, and the big word there is required in this legal context, to wrestle girls in league play and in championships and playoffs and all the rest. And, you know, we heard from Andrew Spradlin. I think one of the most important things he said, as a former high school All-American wrestler, he said that his coach, and we're talking about Bakersfield High School in Bakersfield, California, he said his coach made the decision that if a young man decided that in conscience he could not wrestle a girl, even if it was for the state conference, the state championship, and it was the deciding match, he would honor that boy's moral principles. And I think that's the way it's got to be. But now there are some parents of girls saying they're not going to honor those moral convictions, but are rather going to press for no right to forfeit for young men when it comes to a scheduled match against a girl. I want to know what you think about this, because if it was just the issue of wrestling, if it was just in Seattle, and it was just these private schools, Christian schools in this case, Tacoma Baptist and Cascade Christian, then we could say this is an isolated issue, but it really isn't. This is where this society is headed in terms of the logic of confusing the genders and removing modesty and tearing down the barriers that are supposed to honor and respect the differences between men and women. This is a culture that no longer wants to believe there are any inherent differences between men and women. Let's go to Patrick, calling from Cleveland on WHK Radio. Patrick, go right ahead.
Dr. Mohler, no one has touched on the physical attributes of this sport. No one has brought into the idea of how much injury is done on a male-to-male competition, let alone a male-to-female competition, where the female body is going to be a little bit more not necessarily applicable to handle the injuries that come about, but there have been tons of high school, junior high, and collegiate athletes whose normal life has just been torn to shreds by participating in the sport of wrestling.
Yeah, and you know, it's not the only sport that requires this kind of physical exertion and even risk. Just think about football. You know, not too long ago, there was a girl in one state who sued to be able to play on the football team because there was no girls' football team. And Title IX, as it's being interpreted, this federal law is being applied in that way. You raise some good points, Patrick, and I think, again, that's a moral point, too. When you're talking about the physical integrity of a girl's body, you're talking about a moral issue, not just about sex, but even about her health and well-being. I agree, that is a moral issue. What you have here is the removal of the male responsibility to protect women from injury. And isn't that a big point here? What you have here is a rebellion against a moral order in which it should be the responsibility of men to protect women and of boys to protect girls and to honor them and to respect their modesty and to make sure that they suffer no harm. And, you know, this is a culture of violence and gender confusion and aberrant sexuality. And don't tell me that it's not about sex. These are girls being quoted in this news story. One female wrestler, girl wrestler, said, quote, "When you walk on the mat, you're not a girl. You're not a guy anymore. You're just there to wrestle." Yeah, well, keep saying that. I don't believe it for a minute. I don't even think she really believes it either. Let's go to Sarah calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Sarah, go right ahead.
Hi, Dr. Molnar. Thanks for having me on. I wanted to comment that I went to high school in the mid-70s, 1970s, and there was a girl in my class who was an excellent athlete, and she wanted to be on the boys' baseball team. And under a lot of pressure, they finally let her on. And people were real excited because she was such a good player, but compared to the boys, she was not good, even some of the boys that weren't as good as others. And in the end, it defeated her. She felt terrible. She had to sustain a lot of ridicule from the other teams that brought down the morale of the other players. And I was dating the pitcher of the team at that time, and he would talk about how everybody was down about it. And just physically, like the other caller was saying, even though she was extremely good for a girl, she could not keep up with the boys, and it was just defeated all around for the boys and for her.
Sarah, that's a very good point. And when you talk about individual rights, you know, how long is it before you have lawsuits where a girl doesn't make the team and she claims it's because she's a girl and she sues with Title IX as the legal issue here? You know, it really does point to the litigiousness of our society. Now, everyone, in this case, a girl's parents are ready to go and take it to federal court. And this is a strange picture, too, because this particular father, Mr. Connors, is identified in the Seattle Times as, quote, "a former Episcopal president and one-time pastoral assistant for social justice at St. James Cathedral in Seattle." Ooh, the picture gets clearer all the time. Here you have a former assistant for social justice, and he says that there are limits, he says, to religious liberty. Listen to what he says. He says, quote, "If my religion says that once a year on the full moon I get to have a hit-and-run accident, I think the cops would take exception to that." He admits that's an extreme example, but if you come into the public domain, you can't develop a policy that discriminates against people. We have all kinds of policies that discriminate against people. Very quickly, let's go to Toby, listening on WTBN in Tampa, Florida. Welcome, Tony. All right, we lost Tony there. You know, when you look at an issue like this, and by the way, the phone lines have just been lit up the entire time, and our operator's been doing a great job of trying to handle all these calls. And what we've really tried to do is cover the waterfront of some of the issues that are out there. And so we've talked about the issue of modesty. We've talked about parents teaching sons to respect girls. We've talked about the risk of physical injury. We've talked about how the litigation threat becomes the way a social revolution is really forced here. But, you know, I want to come back to the issue of modesty again and again, because that, to me, is the bottom line issue. And I know there are people out there who are just likely to be very outraged at what I'm going to say. So I'm going to say it very, very carefully. You know, we have reached the point in this culture in which it really is considered out of bounds to question whether a girl should want to wrestle. And I think that is a sign of a lack of moral credibility in a culture. Because we just decided that because of the agenda of political correctness and in the name of egalitarianism and personal liberty and personal rights, we can't even discuss these issues anymore. But you know, where it really hits the ground, or in this case, where it hits the mat, is with a teenage boy being forced with a moral decision about whether or not he is going to fulfill his athletic responsibility or his moral responsibility. He's got to choose the one over the other, with his peers watching, with his parents watching, and with all kinds of risk of ridicule, even litigation. Something's horribly wrong with this picture, and I think we really know what's wrong. I'll be right back. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Well, when this controversy over mixed gender wrestling hit the pages of the Seattle Times over the weekend, we thought we'd better take a look at the deeper issues involved here. And so did a quick search, looking across the country to see what's really at stake. We found some websites and organizations contending on both sides of the issue, mostly contending for the right of girls to wrestle boys. And in one particular website dealing with the arguments, listen to this argument that's being made. One of the main concerns of mixed-gender wrestling is that boys feel unconvertible, I think they mean uncomfortable, wrestling a girl because they might actually touch something. But the question one might ask here is, when a boy wrestles another boy, do boys not use certain moves because they might touch something? For most people, the answer would be no. This is because wrestling is not a sexual sport. It is competition between two athletes trying to see who is the better wrestler for that match. So why make it a sexual sport when a boy wrestles a girl? Does this society have such a mindset that when a boy and a girl have any contact with each other, this means it's sexual? Let me answer that question. Yes. I think that's exactly what I mean to argue, is that we should not assume that in wrestling that it's sexual when it's between two boys. We should assume the opposite. And it's only in a society that's lost all sexual sanity that it would be otherwise. But when it comes to a boy and a girl in this kind of competition, in this kind of contact, with no modesty between them, and with the kind of language worrying about whether or not a boy might, quote, touch something, end quote, we've already crossed a barrier. We've already gone over some kind of divide that should not be crossed. So I'm going to suggest that we as parents need to take the responsibility here. And we need to bring some sanity to this picture. And this means that sometimes parents have to teach their sons to do the right thing when the circumstances may make it very difficult to do the right thing. That must be our job as parents, to make sure that our sons are prepared to make the right decision. Like that mother who spoke about her own sixth grade son who said, "I can't do this, Mom," and he was right, he shouldn't do it. But we also need parents who can speak to girls and say, this isn't just about rights. It's about what's right and wrong. I know that runs against the grain of the wood of today's culture. I know this runs against the tide. But I believe that it's absolutely right. And I think a society that has reached this point of confusion, where this kind of issue is going to be litigated in the courts, it's a society that has already crossed some very unfortunate barriers and has already immersed itself in some very dangerous confusion. Well, folks, you can look for yourself at information about this by tomorrow morning. I'll have an article up posted at my weblog at albertmoeller.com. That's albertmoeller.com. You can follow the links, make your own judgment. You can also tell us what you think. Go to the mail button. Give us some feedback. Folks, every day we talk about the issues that matter. You can count Monday through Friday. Every day we'll put truth on the line. And tomorrow, I'll meet you right here.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Moeller's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.